This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. According to the U.S. Census Bureau's 2012 American Community Survey, the city of Cincinnati has the second highest child poverty rate in the nation, with 53.1% of children living below the poverty line. And people all across our region are facing hard economic times. 18% of the Cincinnati tri-state population lives in poverty. WCPO recently launched a year-long series to explore childhood poverty in our region, the causes, the efforts to reduce poverty rates, and what day-to-day life is like for those in need. And joining us to look at poverty in Greater Cincinnati and the WCPO series Below the Line are Ross Meyer, Vice President of Community Impact with United Way of Greater Cincinnati, Dave Schroeder, Executive Director of the Kenton County Public Library and co-chair of the Northern Kentucky Education Council Team 4, and WCPO reporter Lucy May. You can join our conversation at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or you can find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Lucy, Dave, and Ross, thanks so much for being here this afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You know, I'm just astounded by those numbers that more than 53% of children live below the poverty line in Cincinnati. Lucy, does that surprise you?
It really, it is surprising, and it's really disappointing. I mean, I think we as a community can do a lot better than that. And I think when we, at WCPO started looking at those numbers, not only the numbers within the city, but the numbers in the region as a whole, because poverty has spread well beyond the inner core and is throughout the greater Cincinnati region. That's why we decided we really wanted to take a hard look at this, look at it based on, what the data says and really, really explore this issue and see what we can do about it as a community.
Right, you're talking about poverty that's affecting what, a 14 county region? Is that
exactly? Is that right? Yes, yes, yeah.
Now, what kind of impact are you hoping that this series is going to have?
Well, I think we hope, first of all, that it will raise awareness, that it will help people understand poverty a little bit better. Dave and I were talking before we started that I think people think they know what childhood poverty is. I think they figure it's something that's in downtown, in the inner city Cincinnati, in Covington and Newport. And if you don't live in those areas, you don't think it affects you. You don't think it affects your neighbors. But it's really way beyond that. And that's part of why we focused the first installment of our series on Boone County. Boone County is one of the wealthiest counties in the region. It's the right. Second wealthiest county in Kentucky. And I don't, you know, we talked internally. I grew up in Northern Kentucky myself, and I think people don't understand that poverty's everywhere. There are pockets everywhere, and there's real need in all of our communities.
So what defines the poverty line, Dave? What's the federal poverty rate in the country?
I'm not quite sure, to be honest with you. Lucy probably knows.
Yeah,
it varies depending on how many people you have in your family and even the ages of people you have in your family. I'm not going to get this number exactly right, but I know for the Boone County family that we spent time with, it was one adult and three children under the age of 18. To be the federal poverty line for that family group was less than $24,000 a year, which is crazy. You can't.
$24,000
yes.
a year.
Less than, it was, I think it was $23,571.
That
some crazy right. number. Yeah.
Yes.
Dave, what, I can't imagine. I mean, what is it like for people living in poverty? I mean, how can you even begin to describe it?
Well, one of the things that we kind of came up with, through the Education Council in Northern Kentucky, was that the drawback or what was hurting education throughout our region, particularly in the six counties in Northern Kentucky, was poverty. And we were hearing it across the board. And so our team decided to take on the issue of poverty for a year to raise awareness. And so we were the ones that kind of pulled together the poverty simulator as a way of introducing folks in the region to what poverty really is. And so Lucy and I participated in the first one, which was a great experience. It's really put you in the place of someone who's dealing with a family of four who's living on $24,000 a year. And it's, you know, it was just so daunting and really, when it came down to it, hopeless and impossible. I mean, you know, to face the challenges that you were having to face with that little money just was not working.
So this is a role-playing simulator that the council is putting on?
Correct. You are identified as an individual with a role to play in a family unit. You are given a backstory. You are told what your income is, who's working in the family, who's not working in the family, what the circumstances of each individual in the family is. And then you go through a four-week cycle. So you're living a month in poverty. And your goal basically is to get through that month with what money you have to pay all your bills, to feed your family, and to survive. And it was amazing how many people could not do it.
Our group failed miserably.
We did.
Is it a real eye-opener, Lucy? I mean, does this really make you go, wow, I never realized?
Yeah, it really does because, you know, I did this simulator after I'd been doing quite a bit of reporting on poverty and spending a lot of time with people living in poverty. And even, I mean, it was each week was 15 minutes during the simulation. And then you'd have a few minutes between each of those weeks to sort of regroup as a family unit. And, it was amazing just basically pretending to be poor, how stressful it became very quickly. And then I thought one of the most powerful things about the way you all did the simulation, Dave, was at the end, we all found out that the people all around the room who'd been helping us, who had been the banker or the social worker or the teacher, were people who were enrolled in a gateway program that is for low-income students with children. So these were people who actually were living with poverty. They didn't have to pretend. They were people who had been to the...
They knew. Yeah, firsthand.
And one of these women who had been role-playing as a social worker almost was weeping when she was describing how hard it was for her to say no to us. And we were just pretending to be poor. She said, I've been in that situation and I've had people say no to me. And it was so hard for me to do this.
Yes. We were very fortunate that Matthew Strother from Gateway Community and Technical College led this process. He was the facilitator of both of our sessions. And he pulled together those students. And the students' comments at the end, it was just a wonderful wrap up.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was their personal stories. And so we were kind of living it, you know, in a virtual sort of way. They were putting a face to the actual issue. And so they were making it very clear to us that, you know, this is a very difficult life. And we often hear, well, you should just get a job. Well, we found out very quickly that just getting a job and trying to feed the family and trying to get the kids to school and trying to, you know, pay the mortgage and all of those things isn't as simple as one would
think. It's more easily said than done.
Yes, yes. Yeah. And so getting a job, yes, that is the key. We all understand that. But it's not as easy as one would think when you're living through this, you know, a set of experiences.
Right. It's also getting a job that pays a living wage that
Correct.
You can actually support your family on. I mean, the family that we profiled in Boone County, she was technically above the poverty line. She was making, I think, $29,800 a year, which is above the federal poverty line, which again is kind of crazy because if you have a family, you know how hard it would be to raise three kids,
of four or,
two of whom are in diapers. I mean, everybody knows how much diapers cost. On that kind of money. And this, she had a job that she was working real hard. She didn't get overtime and just getting her kids fed and clothed. It's quite a job.
Also, part of our scenario was that the father in the family had been working for a company for many, many years and had lost his job and that his benefits had, you know, he had extended his benefits as far as they could go. And so he was out looking for a job. And then in the meantime, the mother also lost her job, which just threw the entire family into chaos.
Right. And she was only making $9
an hour
as it was in her job. So we couldn't make it even when she had her job in our simulated family. But after she lost it, we were just drowning. We sold all of our possessions. You can do that in the role-playing game.
Yes.
I ended up in juvie.
Yes.
which
I've always thought you belonged there, Lucy.
Yeah, that's it won't surprise any of our listeners, I guess. But
So do you find that living in poverty is living in a constant state of anxiety?
Yes. I mean, I think it's this kind of chronic, awful stress, I think, that eats away on top of all the unanswered questions that families have.
And it was amazing to me how many people who were in the simulator really took things very seriously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were, you know, very concerned about trying to make this work. And, you know, it was part of their, you know, they wanted to succeed. And, you know, there would be things thrown in their way. You know, part of the simulation is that the moderator, again, Matthew Strother from Gateway, would walk around and throw you a red card. And the red card could be anything from, you know, you received an inheritance to...
The family's malnourished because you're not feeding them enough.
Yes, you have, you haven't fed them. Or your car has broken down and you no longer have transportation. Transportation was another huge issue for almost every family group. You had to provide transportation for your family. So school was easy because you could take the school bus. For the rest of the people in the family, so for the adults, every time they would go to the doctor, every time they would go to a social service agency, every time they would go to work, they had to have a voucher to get there. So that either meant a car to buy gas and to maintain it or public transportation. And so many people, I think, had difficulty in working that out because, you know, most of us that were sitting in that simulator have access to a functioning, working automobile and money for gas. And we found out very quickly that many people don't.
Makes you realize the things you take for granted, doesn't it?
Correct.
Ross, how important is it in dealing with poverty to get people to walk a mile in the shoes of one of their neighbors in need?
Yeah, I think it's incredibly important, you know, especially some of the comments. And we've gone through the simulator within United Way and with many of our donors and supporters. And while there's no real way to understand the daily struggle, and a daily anxiety and stress, it does shed some light on the challenge. And as Lucy put it, it's almost a toxic stress that families living in poverty experience on a daily basis. And some of the research, most recent research about child development shows how really profound that toxic stress can of an impact it can have on a child's development in the very earliest years of life, so much so that it actually can physically change the brains of children as they're developing in the very first few years of life when 90% of the brain develops. And that has lifelong impacts. The daily challenges and this constant set of stressors has profound and long-lasting impacts, especially for children. And now, as you said, literally half of the children born in the city of Cincinnati, 1 in 5 across our region are experiencing on a daily basis.
Well, you know, Ross, the other thing that amazes me, too, is that the city has the second highest child poverty rate in the nation. I find that astounding. Why do you think that poverty is such a stubborn problem in our area, and why is it affecting so many kids?
Well, it's challenging to really pick apart. I mean, many factors are national about jobs and about the growing need for higher levels of education and training for jobs that can pay well. They're changing family demographics that have been happening over the past couple decades so that more and more children are being born into single-parent households. So it's a variety of factors that have made our situation, unfortunately, not that unique because this is a challenge that we're facing around the country. But that one that we have to tackle. And you know, the good news, and I think a reason that I have hope, is that we increasingly, locally and nationally, know a lot about how to change the cycle and how to break the cycle, starting in the very earliest of years when the impact can be so profound. It's really a matter of taking it to a level of scale that can reach literally the tens of thousands of families and children in our community that are living in poverty.
Dave, what do you think? Why do you think that this is such a pervasive problem? And Ross was going into some of the ways to address it. What are some of the ways we can address this?
The one that we're focusing on most in the Education Council is, of course, education. We feel that is, you know, one of the keys to getting families, you know, off of assistance, getting them back on their feet, getting them moving forward. Our teams are working on everything from early childhood literacy through adult ed. And I know our early childhood teams are working very strong to get preschool education in all of our public schools. And I know Dayton and the Dayton Independent School District and the Ludlow Independent School District right now are working on free preschool programs in the coming years to make sure that children have access to good quality education as early as we possibly can. Getting those kids into a classroom setting, getting them the attention they need, also nutrition. One of the things we found out in the simulator was getting to school meant that we didn't have to pay money for groceries for that meal. So mm-hmm. that money could be stretched further for the month to feed us through the rest of the month. And so, all of those activities that are going on in schools, are very important. But, you know, the earlier we can get children, reading, the earlier we can get them focusing on education, and trying to get their parents involved as well. And we're doing that a lot at the libraries too in Greater Cincinnati area. Trying to get families together and reading and pushing literacy and valuing education as a means to move forward. And education can mean everything from a degree to a certificate to training. So we're, you know, we're trying to run the gamut and make sure that as many people have access to as quality of education as possible. And I think that is a key to lifting up our society and our community.
You know, public libraries, as you're talking about, they've been something of a safe haven for people in poverty, a place that you could go to that was safe and where you could have access to information and books for free. How much of that do you see in the public libraries in Kenton County? Do they provide specific programs for low-income families?
We do lots of different programming. We're focusing a lot on early childhood education at the Kenton County Public Library. We're visiting our schools. We're visiting our daycares. We're trying to get library cards into the hands of children as soon as we possibly can, getting books in their hands. We just did an early childhood literacy fair that we do every year, where we do screenings of small children. So looking at their cognitive skills and other skills. And then if we identify issues, then we refer them to the appropriate authorities that can help them. So we're constantly looking for those kind of things. We have our summer read and feed program, which is a federal program that provides food through the schools over the summer, and we provide literacy programming. So the summer slide is what they call it, keeping kids reading and engaged over the summer, because there's that big chunk of time during the summer where so many kids start to fall back. And so if we at the library can keep them reading during that time period and engaged, then they can hit the ground running when they start school for the next year. So these are just a few examples of what we're doing. But libraries have always filled that role. When you walk into a public library, you will see people from various income levels, various neighborhoods. I think we've done a very good job as a national library system, being open and being public. That's what we were founded to do. And, you know, even though the way we offer materials differently, electronic resources today, as well as books, our mission continues to be the same. Our original document that created us talks about that we will be free and open to all people of all races and all creeds. And that was in the early 1900s. So we have fulfilled that role and continue to do so.
Ross, you were talking about creating job opportunities as one of the things that United Way is working on. What are some of the other efforts and programs that United Way has for dealing with the issue of poverty?
Sure. Well, I really want to reiterate a point that Dave made.
Okay.
That early childhood is really the point at which we can have the greatest impact and the highest, you know, return on our collective investment. As I mentioned earlier, 90% of a child's brain develops by the time they're 5 years old, yet 90% of all public funding for education happens after that point. We're really missing the point of opportunity when the gaps, one, show up very early, and two, where it's the most cost effective to intervene. And that's why we've been so very focused on providing support to parents in their various earliest years of life, even prenatally, through programs like Every Child Succeeds that have proven that with the right kind of coaching and support, parents, even those most at risk, can provide a strong first couple years for their child, and that impact lasts. Combined with quality preschool for 2 years, we know that those kids, even the kids facing the most daunting obstacles, can show up ready to learn and succeed by the time they get to school. Those two areas, best practice home visiting as well as quality preschool, are two of our primary, what we're calling our bold plays, the big game-changing strategies that we're collectively pushing against to make faster progress against our community's bold goals to help our kids get ready for kindergarten. Providing every child in our region with 2 years of quality preschool would be transformative and would provide, especially for those kids growing up in poverty, the right kind of support and preparation they need to be successful when they get to school. In addition to that, we know that many of the programs around job training that we've been working on through an effort called Partners for Competitive Workforce with Gateway and many other partners that train people for jobs that exist that are going unfilled due to lack of qualified workers in fields such as healthcare, manufacturing, IT, have proven to get people back into work into not just any job, but good jobs that can provide, you know, for a family. Making good progress, but we have to take it to a much bigger scale if we're going to really change the trajectory for these families. The good news, though, and why I do have hope, is that we have a tremendous amount of evidence, both locally and nationally, that these interventions work and that they work for those children and those families that need it the most. But we're only reaching a fraction of those who could benefit from these interventions. Mm.
Another cause, not just locally, but I think across the nation, of poverty that isn't as popular to talk about. I mean, it's hard to look into the face of a poor child and not want to help that child. I think you have to be pretty heartless to do that. Mm-hmm. But another issue here and all across the country is mass incarceration and people leaving prison with felony convictions and then having a heck of a time getting a job that they can help support themselves in a legal way, in a law-abiding way, and support their families. And there's a growing effort locally. St. Vincent de Paul has a new prison reentry program that a former, he calls himself a returning citizen, is leading to really help address poverty in that way. St. Vincent de Paul has found that a huge portion of their families that they serve are kind of crippled by having someone in the household who has a felony conviction and can't get a decent job and help contribute to the family. I just wrote a story on a company in Hamilton that hires felons, and the guy, the CEO, says, "I don't care what you did, show me what you can do on this job." And he said some of his most loyal employees are guys who served time in prison and now have a job where they stay there, they work hard, they make a living wage, and they're helping to support their families. So that's a much less popular cause, but I think it's one that people locally are starting to pay a little bit more attention to and could help move the needle on the other end of the spectrum, helping the adults who are trying to help their kids.
Lucy, as you're doing the research on this series and writing it, do you see signs of hope that we're making progress on dealing with poverty?
I do. I think, you know, Ross was talking about the things that United Way is doing, and I think in talking to Ross, the United Way and a lot of its agencies are seeing more and more the need to help both ends of the family. So certainly helping those cute little kids in preschool and the babies and getting the right start. But, you know, if those babies are getting help and their parents still don't have good jobs or can't read or can't get ahead for whatever reason, there's a piece of that family that's still broken. So I think there's a lot more effort going into a holistic approach. There's a new fund coming to town called Greenlight that really is going to look for innovative approaches to tackling poverty in the urban core, which I think is pretty exciting. And I think more and more people are starting to pay attention and realize this is an issue that affects all of us.
Ross, Dave, and Lucy, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
Ross Meyer is Vice President of Community Impact with United Way of Greater Cincinnati. Dave Schroeder is the Executive Director of the Kenton County Public Library, and he's co-chair of the Northern Kentucky Education Council Team 4. And Lucy May, reporter for WCPO. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Archives of our programs are available at WVXU.org. Today's program was produced by Pete Reitmeier. The technical director was Rick Andres. I'm Mark Haney. Stay tuned for Here and Now, coming up next on 91.7 WVXU.